Greetings from Soundography. Soundography is a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we are between seasons right now. Look, they're back behind us, Hammond. Do you see it? There's the previous season off behind us. And then there's the other season. It's coming up in the distance. It's on the horizon, and it's approaching us really fast.
I know. Ozzy Osbourne and Anthrax are giving us fingers, and we got Megadeth and Fallout Boy waving at us.
That's right. The stink of trying to remember one that we didn't like so much last season, but the stink of that one is behind us.
Well, let's just go with Third Eye Blind because they're always going to be mad at it.
Right. There's always going to be the stink of Third Eye Blind behind us. But like we enjoy doing between seasons, we're doing an episode of You Gotta Listen to This. And this is where one of us or somebody from our circle of friends or patrons or supporters recommends a single album. Instead of telling us an entire artist to deep dive into, this is so much easier. Just give us an album. And we listen to it. We talk about it. And it's a nice little bite-sized show.
And it covers things that we would never do a full show on.
Right. These are usually bands that we wouldn't do as a whole episode. Although next week, boy, the album that I'm giving you, I'm so on the fence about it being a full episode. But I'm going to relegate it just to one album because we'll talk about that next week.
We'll get there.
Yes. But let's talk about the one that you provided for us this week. This one came from you. And what is your You Gotta Listen to This?
I picked Chroma Keys' debut album called Dead Air for Radios. Came out in December of 98. And it features the former keyboard player from Dream Theater after he left the band. And this is his first release as a solo artist.
Look at you wedging a Dream Theater into our show.
This is the only way I'd get it done.
This is true. It is. And it's funny because I found that out after I listened to the album probably a good 3 or 4 times. I listened to it one more time today just to refamiliarize myself with it, which is funny. In my text message to you, I said defamiliarize myself with it. Completely unintentional.
But I'm trying to distance myself from this album.
Exactly. I'm trying to completely wipe my memory of it. But this is my first, not only my first listening to this album, but I'd never even heard of Chroma Key before. Obviously, I'd heard of Dream Theater before, but I didn't know that Kevin Moore had left Dream Theater to do this project, or at least to take a break from Dream Theater.
No, what happened was during the Awake recording cycles, he was expressing a lot of displeasure, and they were trying to figure out if he was going to stay or go. He'd been with them since the beginning. And On Awake is a song called Space Divest, which is a very, very Kevin Moore song. I mean, it's all samples. It's all very ambient synthy. I think they've only played it in concert a handful of times because he left the band before the album even came out.
A stranger love in a space divest. Love is
a mm. Oh, wow. All right.
He recorded some demos and then he did his own, released this album. So he left, you know, there's not been a lot of there's been a lot of speculation, but a lot of direct information about why he left, other than he just wanted to do his own thing.
Gotcha. Just wanted to kind of branch out on his own. Yeah. Did he, how much, I know he's keyboardist, did he pull in some other people to do other work on this, or did he do some of the other instruments as well?
It has Mark Zonder, who plays with Fate's Warning.
Okay.
It has Jason Anderson, and then Joey Vera, who's also another well-known drummer on some of these tracks. And I think what he kind of did was he just recorded everything and then kind of put everything into a sampler, very Art of Noise style, chopped everything up and then just started recording.
I totally believe that, especially with, you know, a lot of the quote unquote found audio that you hear throughout the album. And I would call this, because of that through line, that found audio through line, that I'm just going to say it. I wrote this in my notes that it reminds me a lot of Roger Waters' Radio Chaos. which was his follow-up to Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, and was like a, you know, basically about a weird radio station kind of thing that had a lot of this found audio stuff in it as well. But it reminds me of that, and this feels like a concept album. I think it qualifies through all, you know, all criteria as a concept album. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, well, most definitely. I have found many different through lines by listening to this album from front to back over and over again. I mean, when I first heard it, I was going through kind of a stressful part of my life, and all of a sudden, you know, even the waves and on the page hit me. And then as things calmed down and things got better, other songs hit me in different ways. And I don't think I've ever had a time where this album wasn't near at hand.
Yeah. I can see why. It's proggy, but it's not full deep in the swamp proggy. Like, it's very on the shoreline proggy. So it's accessible to the non-proggers as well.
Like, yeah. It's like Art of Noise meets prog.
Sure. Yeah. I would totally give you that. Well, all right, let's go. Do you want to go track by track? Do you want to talk about, all right. Track by
track. And also, I'm dying to know what you thought of this thing.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, I kind of, gave a little bit of hint to that when you had asked me, have I had a chance to listen to the album yet? And I said, yeah, I've actually listened to it 3 or 4 times. That usually is a good sign. It's like, if I listen to it once and say, I never want to hear this thing again, then you'll know about it. But this I really enjoyed. Yeah. And I enjoy listening to it as a whole unit, as opposed to saying, oh, I'll keep 1 or 2 songs on here. I can totally see this as being like a kind of a background while I'm working, or even cycling kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's good. I don't know. It's good. It's a good, solid album. And it's,
I really like this when I go on walks.
Yeah, I can totally see that. All right. So let's talk about Colorblind, which is the first track on the album.
Too much red will go right to your head. But if it's all the same to you, give me back my blue. Other colors fade.
Which feels like if there was a single from the album, that would totally be it, Colorblind.
Yeah, Colorblind is a great song. It's not my favorite on the album. But it makes a good album opener because it's a really kind of cool, astonishingly complicated keyboard part at the beginning. Yeah,
dark and mellow vibe, which is what I wrote in my notes. But you're totally right, like a really good opener to the album. And for all intents and purposes, really sets the stage for what you're going to hear through the rest of the album.
That's the one thing I can say. He found a sound palette for this whole album and then stayed very tightly within that sound palette. Yeah. And you're getting all the sounds you're going to hear for the rest of the album in this one song.
Did he, in the Dream Theater days, did he do any vocals?
No, he was not.
Is that who we're hearing? I mean, is it Kevin Moore that we're hearing vocal-wise? Okay.
Yeah, he is singing. And that was a big departure because he was not the vocalist. And when he did his demos, he was talking about how I'm not the vocalist, and he somehow continues to grow as a vocalist.
Yeah, there's a very David Gilmour, Pink Floyd quality to his vocals, or even an Alan Parsons Project quality to his vocals. I know they brought in several different people to do vocals, but
there's a treatment to the vocals that are very Alan Parsons.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a good, like I said, Colorblind is a really good opener. And then you kind of go into that Even the Waves. And this is where you start hearing the kind of like the lost signal, you know, getting picked up on the ham radio kind of thing. I guess you get a little bit of that in Colorblind, but
4 days we're still waiting.
Much. It's almost like the radio was working,
right?
And then it goes out, and then you hear the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, totally. And this is where I started writing, okay, Roger Waters Radio Chaos as an example, and again, really cool, mysterious vibe to that, which I like.
Yeah, I, when I have taken selections to either share with people or to just make a playlist. It usually is Colorblind, Even the Waves, and On the Page, which we'll talk about later. So those are the three songs I'm most familiar with and I like the most on the album. But the rest of them, when you sit down and listen, it really does tie everything together, because then it becomes more of an aural experience instead of just songs.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it, is that those three can be enjoyed on their own, but there is a lot of this mortar that holds those bricks together that is very satisfying when you hear it. Undertow.
Last night, hit the net, woke up in a sweat, same scene, different dream, sudden ending.
As a third track, there's a very, for me, I wrote down Bruce Hornsby piano. Obviously, it's Kevin Moore doing piano, but it's...
It does, you know, now that you say it, I'm never going to unhear that's the way it is. Well, thank you, Brian.
No problem. There you go. I aim to please. It's like a high speed. He's so fast too. Like, it's a very high speed, cool piano intro that I like.
But it has that old timey wet sound that Bruce Hornsby sometimes adds to it. And you're dead on. Now I'm never going to be able to.
My pleasure. I'm sure you're playing a clip of it here so people can hear it. But. Cool. Yeah. And again, another solid track. I didn't have any notes for America the Video and SOS, although I was a little disappointed that SOS wasn't an ABBA cover, but I got over it really quick.
No, I actually thought that when I first saw the album too, but then I realized that both of those mostly are the found audio things. Those are if there was a story, that's where the story is buried, is in those kinds of audio clips and those kind of, I don't want to use the word tone poem, but you kind of have to.
I heard your voice on my machine. So alone, happy song, almost memorized. Like the tracks on your back, let it fossilize.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Tone poem, huh? Never heard that phrase. Is that like a common phrase?
Yeah, it's. I know that on one of the trailer collections from one of the Star Wars movies, where they didn't really have any words, it was just sounds and some music underneath building. Oh. They did a series of them leading up, and I think it might have been The Force Awakens.
So I tried to check from this exit. There was nothing. So it was the worst, like standing time I ever had in the States with hitchhiking. I'm standing there and standing there and standing there. And after a while, the guy stopped. Like, I had no money.
But there's a bunch of tone poems that they released.
Oh, that's cool. I'm looking at that.
It's trailer. It's a thing.
Yeah, that definition online. Interesting. Okay. Cool. We get into camera four. I hope I'm not going too fast. Definitely stop me if you want to talk more about those other two. Yeah, again, on this one, I wrote more found audio, but this one, I like the other ones, but I do really like the found audio on this one, because it feels like you should be paying attention to all this stuff on the whole album. And almost like, oh, you got into camera four, you better go back and make sure you're paying attention, because it does feel like it ties in with everything else. I think that
it's like you're standing in an escape room and you just realize that all the noises you're hearing matter.
Yes. Oh yeah, totally. That's a great way to put it. That's a totally great way to put it. Oh, love it. Yeah. All right, let's get to On the Page, which you mentioned is your of the three. It's one of the three favorite songs on the album. Is this your favorite, by the way?
And I will say this is my favorite song on the album. And I like it musically. I like it lyrically. I like it pace-wise. Yeah. I like it with the found audio. There is nothing on this. This is like a perfect song for me, because it covers all the bases that I enjoy.
Yeah, I got a bit of a Coldplay vibe during the chorus. Like, he almost dips into Chris Martin land.
Life is so much cleaner on the page. It's like the morning when I'm dreaming, and everything is so thirsty. It's just a seven-hour movie.
But still, again, very Pink Floyd, very the Final Cut era, David Gilmour, Pink Floyd, which I really liked. And very, you know, again, it's one of these things where I'd like to have the lyrics in front of me as I listen to the album to see what they're singing about. And
basically the topic of the song is that, you know, when you write everything out you want to do in life, when you write it all out and you plan it, that's great. But it never really works out that way. And that's basically the gist of it, is that even when your life is going along, you still have to improvise at times.
Okay. Interesting. So it's what you've got down on the page versus what actually happens. That's cool. Uh-huh. Now we get to the mouse, or just plain mouse. The sun is dying.
I will say this. This is my least favorite piece on the song.
On the album?
On the album.
I can see why, because there isn't much there besides a little bit of ambient music and what sounds like a voicemail that somebody left for Kevin on his answering machine that he just decided to put music to.
Yeah, it's experimental, like Steve Vai does, where you just, like, I don't know, records his kid and then chases his kids around with a quarter and then sets it all to guitar. Yeah. This is just one of those ones where, like, this speaking thing has a rhythm to it, and I'm going to set music to it.
I want to know the backstory, though. I do want to know, like, was this a message that got left on his voicemail? Is it somebody he knows? Is it somebody he doesn't know? Is there an effing mouse? Where is the effing mouse now? There's a lot of...
I think it was based on the story of a mouse being found that died between the walls of the studio. If I remember, I could be way off base, but I think that it's based on the story of the studio, and it started to stink, and they couldn't find the mouse between the walls, and it was this mouse that was in the walls, and I could be way off. I could be way misremembering. And if I am,
that sounds so totally believable.
But I think that might be where it is.
Yeah, I totally believe that's the story. It's just an effing mouse. And then the album closes with Hail Mary, which is another found audio track that does integrate some vocals. So it's again another. Oh no, maybe there's not vocals in that one.
No, there. It's not sung vocals. It's that weird Sam Commodore 64.
That's what it is. Talking. Yes. Yes.
And I see this huge ball. Now in the center it's a gray colored ball. Almost. Oh, I don't know what it is.
Which makes this, in my opinion, the most off-putting and disturbing song on the album, because it really feels like you've stumbled onto something you shouldn't have.
Yeah, totally.
This would be playing on the radio in Silent Hill before the triangle head chases you down.
And you know what? It kind of makes me wish that there wasn't two tracks after On the Page before the end. Like, it almost feels like you need On the Page as kind of the climax of the album, and then Hail Mary is kind of the good epilogue. Mouse could have been a little bit earlier in the album, or
they could have stuck America the Video, then Mouse, then SOS.
And maybe even just put parts of Mouse in America the Video or SOS or Camera 4 or something like that. But it's almost too much of the found audio and audio synthesis stuff after On the Page. I want a little bit more vocals to kind of close things out. But
what I'm impressed with is those last two songs are like 9 minutes total together.
Yeah.
A whole lot of found audio to work into music. Yeah. The one thing I can say is it does get a little, I don't want to say tiring, but it does get a little old after a while. Like, once you've heard it once or twice, you're ready to either move on to the next album or not listen to those.
And I think that's the I think that's what makes it such a good album for kind of a background thing, walking or cycling mm-hmm. or doing work or whatever, and having this kind of on in the background as a very easy soundtrack that you don't have to pay a lot of attention to and can just kind of enjoy the support of whatever you're doing with this music.
Yeah. And to be fair to Kevin, when he moves on, he splits off into other branches. He has his solo stuff. He does Kevin Moore, and he does soundtracks to movies. And he did a lot of experimental audio things. And then he's got OSI, which is the Office of Strategic Influence. And it's other kind of more rockin', more aggressive pieces of music that he does with other mm-hmm. guest artists. And then Chroma Key keeps going with other pieces, with other project or with other albums. And they're all very different and they're all very good. It just, you need to find your place with him. Cause if you like the ambient stuff, then stay with Chroma Key and move into his solo stuff. If you like the more aggressive kind of proggy stuff, then OSI is right in your alley. And we came really close to listening to an OSI album.
How did you discover this? Because you're obviously, I know, a fan of Dream Theater, but how were you aware of this? Cause 1998 would have been early days of, the internet and being able to see what the bands you follow are doing when they split up or when they leave.
That's kind of how it was, as I read articles about him leaving. And then I found a website and I ordered it from the website. And I remember when I got the album, it was autographed by him. And I wrote him an email saying, "Hey, I got the album. I love it. Thanks for putting this out." And he wrote me back and said, "You were my first. I got the album email. I really appreciate it. Thanks for letting me know. And thanks for the support."
Super cool.
And wow, cool. And you know, I've been a supporter of his stuff. I'm part of his Patreon now. So, I mean, I love the stuff he's doing now. And he seems like a decent guy. And
the stuff he's doing now is, like you said, kind of that, all the different aspects, the OSI, the supporting other artists and things like that.
Well, so his Patreon is Chroma Key, and so it's still this kind of ambient, kind of more technological, synthy kind of things, and it's great. But he still does OSI projects. I think one just came out a couple of years ago. And I don't know if he's done anything under his own name recently, but I know he has. I know he did an album called Shine that was cool. And then he did a soundtrack to something. And it was a two-disc release. And on one of the discs, it had this old black and white, like early 50s kind of video. And then he set music to it, which made it feel really, really weird. And I was super impressed by it, but I can only watch it because it was really, really off-putting. It was very disturbing.
Interesting.
Like kids playing in a 1950s park, and the very ominous synthy music is playing behind them. I'm like, don't kill the kids.
Like a little warning video that the nuclear attack is about to happen. Is that stuff available to view to non-patrons, or can you only see it if you're a patron?
Well, that the patron stuff is completely different. Okay. That's an album, and you'd have to buy that on disc to get that. I don't know if it's on YouTube or not, but he's been doing stuff. He's been consistently working, and he does a lot of really experimental, really different things. And whenever you get something of his that he has his name on it somewhere, get ready for something that's going to make you have to kind of pay attention and don't expect the same thing twice.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I enjoyed it, Hammond. I think that was
really, really
good. You got to listen to this.
Are you going to dig deeper into Kevin's music?
I probably will. I'll probably get a couple of recommendations from you on where to go next, but this I really like. So, if you were to, stick a pin in, Dream Theater, and then wrap some yarn around Dream Theater and connect it to a pin that's pushed into Chroma Key, I'd like to continue on that direction away from Dream Theater. Like, continue on that same path. As much as I like Dream Theater, I'd like to hear more, like, what he's doing with this same kind of stuff now as technologies evolve, as music evolves,
as he evolves.
Yeah, exactly. I'd like to hear what he's doing these days.
And Chroma Key patrons there. And
I'm not ready to give him money, Hammond. You misunderstand. No, I want to know what I can stream and kind of get a taste of. Yeah.
No, yeah. No, and I can point you in directions. totally good.
Cool. Very cool. Well, thank you. And thank you, the listener. Again, if you want to get in on this, we do accept, you got to listen to this, recommendations from our patrons. Just jump over to patreon.com/soundography and sign up for one of the levels that allow you, sign up for the level that allows you to be our You Got to Listen to This pusher, and you can recommend something for us to listen to. Very good. Well, we'll be back next week with another one. It's my turn to make Hammond listen to something. I teased a little bit about it earlier, and we'll see what that thing is. That'll all be coming up next week on Soundography. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.